the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, and happy Labor Day. This goes all the way back to 1882, when the Central Labor Union of New York City created a day off, they said, for the working citizens. Congress made Labor Day a federal holiday in 1894. So here we are, over a century after America has been celebrating Labor Day as a major federal and state holiday. You know, when you start thinking about Labor Day and you start thinking about the layout of the year, it is clear that Labor Day takes on a very strong symbolic significance. Here we are. It's like summer is now over. The weather doesn't seem to know that in many parts of the country, but our schedules do. And in Labor Day, in a political season, we find ourselves right in the middle of the most intense period of a presidential campaign. As a matter of fact, tonight, Labor Day becomes the opening night for the Republican National Convention in Minneapolis. And so I would just encourage you right now, as you're thinking about getting back in the work week ahead, start thinking about the serious business we have as citizens, so start paying attention to what's going on with the Republicans meeting in Minneapolis after last week the Democrats met in the city of Denver. Of course, there's a great deal of interest going into the Republican National Convention because of not only the fact that you have John McCain as the presumptive nominee of the party for the office of president, but now you have Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as the presumptive vice presidential nominee. Other business will be taking place, ranging from the adoption of the party's platform to the various other things that the parties do when they meet. But this is going to be, in many ways, America's opportunity to get to know Sarah Palin as the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party, the first woman to be on the national ticket of the Republican Party. And we'll be watching together what happens this week, because it's likely really to make history and to catch a great deal of attention. But the attention of this program to Governor Palin came several months ago with the birth of her son, Trigg Paxton Van Palin, born April 18th of this year, 2008. And the significance of his birth is this. Trigg was born after having been prenatally diagnosed as a Down syndrome baby. Now, here's the scenario. You have a sitting governor and her husband. They already have four children. Now along comes a fifth child. They are in their 40s. The child is diagnosed with Down syndrome. An awful lot of people would have advised an abortion under those circumstances, would have told them it would have been perfectly natural. It would have made sense for them to have aborted that baby under those circumstances. But Governor Sarah Palin and her husband Todd believe in the sanctity of human life. They refuse to consider an abortion, even with the diagnosis of Down syndrome. And in the background of that is the fact that right now in America, 80 to 90% of all babies prenatally diagnosed with Down syndrome are indeed being aborted. So it is fascinating to think about what this now means for the Republican Party and for this nation. I was moved, thrilled by the announcement of her nomination, and I was thrilled by the picture that America got to see back in Middletown, Ohio, near Dayton on Friday, when the announcement was made, and there was the Palin family. And Trigg was there, in the arms of his eldest sister, an eloquent testimony to the sanctity and dignity of every single human life. Today on this program, we're going to have a classic rebroadcast of the program on Trigg Paxton Van Palin. It goes back to May of this year when we had the conversation about the significance of the birth of this little baby. And we had that conversation on this program long before we had any idea that John McCain would name Governor Palin as his vice presidential candidate and running mate. So let's go back to that conversation in just a moment. I think you'll be thrilled just because of the affirmation of the dignity of every single human life, because of the affirmation of what it means not only to give intellectual assent to the dignity of human life, but to live out the implications of believing that every single human life is sacred. And so we'll be turning to that in just a few moments. Because this is a classic rebroadcast, we will not be taking calls, but I think you'll be really encouraged by that discussion coming up in just a moment. In terms of Labor Day, there are, of course, a good many millions of Americans who are not enjoying a day off, but are instead working. Many of those people who are working today are the policemen and patrolmen on the highways, the firemen and other people in terms of first response teams, people working in hospitals. And yes, there are a good many businesses that are still in operation today, even on Labor Day, because one of the differences between the 1880s when Labor Day became a holiday and the 1890s when it became a federal holiday, fast forwarding from then until now, is that we are now in a global 24/7 economy. We're now in a very different situation than we were back in the 1880s. It's not as if you can just turn the factory off and all the workers go home. We're now in a situation of a global integrated economy in which now is working time somewhere, everywhere, and in which you have workers who are meeting all kinds of new challenges. And I just want to come back to say that we need to celebrate the American worker as we think about Labor Day. And I don't just mean in a political sense and speaking of a worker in the way that, for instance, you have all kinds of appeals to people on the basis of class designation. I want to speak to those who are doing any kind of work, who are making any kind of contribution. Whether you're working today or celebrating a day off on Labor Day, let's recognize the honor and dignity of work. That is something that on this program we come back to time and time again, because especially in thinking about inculcating this in the young, we recognize that there are a lot of Americans who don't want to get hands dirty. There are a lot of Americans who just consider some jobs to be beneath their dignity. But someone has to do those jobs. And so I say hats off and congratulations to those, a word of appreciation to those who are doing the hard work that other people do not want to do. The jobs that involve things that others would not aspire to do. And we need to recognize that in a biblical worldview, so long as the job is ethical and making a contribution to society, it's an honorable job to hold. It's an honorable work. And we tend to, in our fallenness and in our confusion, confuse things to the extent that we esteem some jobs that are really meaningless in this society because they're considered worthwhile and elite. And we devalue the jobs that are really crucial to this society, without which we cannot have a thriving economy, an operating society, and America as we know it today. When you start thinking about Labor Day, I hope, for instance, that when we think about labor, we're not thinking about something that we get not to do today. You know, that's a very interesting way. Is labor something we try to avoid whenever possible, and we do it just whenever we have to do it? We do just enough of it in order to get by? Or is labor something that is a gift to us that indeed is something that enables us to exercise a capacity that God has given us to make a contribution to the society of which we are a part? I hope we're looking at it in that sense rather than the other. The Bible does dignify human labor. And our Creator made us to work, gave us the capacity to fabricate, to plow, to invent, and to organize our energies together. And, you know, there's another side to that story. The Bible condemns laziness, slothfulness, and those who will not work and try to avoid work. This nation has become the greatest economic powerhouse the world has ever seen. To a great extent, this is a tribute to American workers. Even in the age of the information economy, this nation depends upon the millions of workers who faithfully and effectively do their work, perform their jobs, and lead this world in productivity. You know, when you start thinking about children these days, it's hard to imagine exactly what kinds of jobs they may one day hold. In an economy that is as innovative as ours, that is developing new technologies and the promise of things not even foreseen today, we know that there are jobs out there that are going to require a lot of intelligence, a lot of training, a lot of education and preparation. Just try talking to Franklin Delano Roosevelt about someone who would be a software designer. You know, try thinking about going back and talking to Madame Curie about an astronaut. We realize that the world changes around us, but we also recognize that the issue of work is a constant. The gift of labor and the need of work is a constant. There are those who paint the picture of a utopian society in which none of us has to work. Perhaps it's like a cartoon in which the robots do all the work. Perhaps it's some scenario in which we have machines or other technologies that simply take care of everything for us. Well, that's not really a utopia in the sense of the best of all possible worlds. It's a dystopia. It would turn out to be the worst of all possible worlds because there would be no reason for us to be alive. We were not made merely for play. Play's good, and that also is a part of the reflection of the glory of God. We are not meant merely for rest, although rest is good and important and a part of what it means to be made in the image of God. For God himself rested and gave us the model, indeed, of rest on the Sabbath. But God made us to work. And let's face it, as we are now looking at going back to work, as we look to tomorrow, is the day after the Labor Day holiday. Tomorrow, we're not going back to what we should hate until we can get to the next holiday. We should go back to that which we do for the glory of God, seeking to make a contribution in our own way, in our own place, in our own community, in this world, that will make a distinctive mark because we have been here. And also, we need to think of the workplace as a place where we can have influence for the glory of God, where we can be an agent of salt and light in a world that otherwise is mostly concerned with matters no higher than the economy. Advertising, commerce, sales, profit reports. Add a distinctive mark wherever you are and celebrate the gift of work, even on Labor Day. Back for a conversation about the miracle of life and the little baby known as Trig Paxson Van Palen on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome to the Albert Moeller Program. Governor Sarah Palin of Alaska, the Republican governor there, served since 2006. She's a rising star in the political scene and quite a family there in Alaska. She herself was a basketball star in high school, a beauty queen. In later years, her husband is a multiple times winner of the world's biggest and most famous snowmobile race. They are both hunters. They have a beautiful family. Until this year, they had a family of four with, that is, four children, a son, and then three daughters. And then on April the 18th of this year, Trig Paxson Van Palen was born. And he is, of course, their fifth child and second son. Their eldest son, Track, who I guess is about 18 years old, serves in the United States Army. They have three daughters, Bristol, Willow, and Piper. Now, little Trig made news long before he was born. And he made news because the Alaska governor, in terms of her prenatal care, underwent some tests that indicated the medical probability that Trig had an extra chromosome. In particular, an extra chromosome that is an indicator of Down syndrome. Now, the background to this is what is unknown or at least unspoken in many circles, and that is that we are witnessing the end, perhaps, in this society, of babies being born with Down syndrome. Now, this isn't because we found a way to cure Down syndrome or to correct the chromosomal pattern prenatally. It's because the babies are being aborted. Just how big an issue is this? Well, let me read to you the lead article from the Weekly Standard, lead paragraph by Wesley J. Smith, in an article written just a few weeks ago. It says this: "It's a bitter irony that even as we are enlarging our commitment to human equality in many areas, we are turning our backs on it in others. In particular, we may be about to eliminate from our society people with Down syndrome and other genetically caused disabilities." In my article published earlier this week, I cite an expert who refers to what he calls a search and destroy mission, a seek and destroy mission into the womb in order to use genetic testing in order to determine which babies should not be born. And in the case of Trig Paxson Van Palen, the test revealed that this little baby boy, unborn, carried that extra chromosome that indicated a likelihood of Down syndrome. A lot of people would have aborted. When I say a lot of people, what are we talking about? We're talking about between 80 and 90% by most estimates of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome being aborted, never being born. On this program, we've talked about this repeatedly because it is a big story. It's one of those developments in the culture that helps us to understand who we really are as a people. And it is one of the most frightening things I think about when I think about this culture and its direction. We're looking at the elimination of people who are just considered unworthy of coming to life. And we are living in a technological age in which so many things can be tested. It will not be long until, without doubt, people are going to be able to get a prenatal diagnosis of indications for everything from Down syndrome to potentially hair and eye color and perhaps even athletic ability and intellectual aptitude. What happens when parents say, no, that sounds just not good enough? By the way, there is pending legislation in the United States Senate, the Senate Bill 1810, which is sponsored by Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas, and I understand co-sponsored by Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts. That's an interesting pairing. that would require doctors giving these tests to indicate something of the positive aspects of life with a person with Down syndrome. That is a very interesting pairing. Sam Brownback, after all, is well known as a pro-life member of the United States Senate. Senator Edward Kennedy is certainly not pro-life, but he did have a sister named Rosemary who had Down syndrome, one of the multitude of the Kennedy kids. And so he has a personal investment in this issue. And insofar as he's on the right side on this issue, we should be very thankful. But we need to recognize that this bill is not calling for an end to this testing. It's not calling for a prohibition of abortion for those who are given this diagnosis. It's simply calling for some good news to be given to them that living with a child with Down syndrome is not overwhelmingly negative. The background of this is that 23% of physicians or genetics counselors said that when they speak with parents, they emphasize the negative aspects of parenting. It's the parents who are saying that when they have talked to physicians or genetics counselors, and that they felt urged to choose abortion. Well, I'm really moved by the story, I have to tell you. And I'm really moved by the response of the Palins to this. An amazing family. They have to be an amazing family. The wife, the governor of the state of Alaska, the husband, a well-known figure also there in Alaska. They have four children. They're kind of the poster family of the state of Alaska. And, you know, a lot of people who are coming up with a poster family would say, well, let's airbrush out the child with Down syndrome. But God bless the Palins. They're not doing that at all. Right before the world, they're saying we're proud of him. They're saying when we look at him, he looks perfect. And there's just something incredibly sweet about that, and something that certainly deserves our attention on this Friday before Mother's Day 2008. To join the discussion, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program, and Jim is listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Mueller. I want to let you know my wife and I, we have three beautiful children, and all three are very intelligent. And you know what's interesting? My youngest, Jacob, who's 3 and a half, he has Down syndrome. The young man at 2 years of age knew sign language, and, you know, he, for all intents and purposes, he's bilingual. You know, that's saying more than what I'm capable of doing. Every night I'd come home, and he'd learn a new sign language, and I'd have to have my wife translate it for me. And it just infuriates me, and it hurts me to think that our society would prefer to abort that beautiful boy. And even our doctor said, you know, there were options. And, you know, the only option was to abort him, and, you know, my wife has run into the doctor and has shown, you know, set pictures of our son and said, would you have aborted this little guy? Look at him. He's beautiful. And, you know, he's been just a pure blessing to us.
You know, and, Jim, thank you so much for that call. And I have to tell you, your call encouraged me at several levels. One, of course, comes down to the words you spoke. So clearly affirming your own son as a father and your thankfulness for him. But I got to tell you, the other thing I appreciate in your voice is just the eagerness as a father to talk about your son. Because I think that's what a lot of people miss in this, is that they think, if we did have a child with Down syndrome, we'd be ashamed to talk about this child. We would talk about this child perhaps in a lower voice. We would acknowledge having this child, but this is not the child that we would put forth perhaps in our poster vision of what a family should look like. But I can tell from your voice it's exactly the opposite with you, Jim, and I really appreciate that. And I know so many other people who also have Down syndrome children or Down syndrome siblings just friends who they know who have Down syndrome, who say, look, you know, what my life would be without this child, without this brother or sister, without this friend, is something I don't even want to contemplate. And we're looking at the fact that given the intersection of technology and the availability of abortion, 80 to 90% of babies diagnosed right now with Down syndrome as a likelihood are simply being aborted. And on this program some months ago, when we talked about this, I cited a report from an obstetrician gynecologist in California who said he simply woke up one morning and realized that he had not delivered a child with Down syndrome in a very long time. And just given the odds, that can't add up. And then he realized, well, there had been several babies diagnosed with Down syndrome, but the mothers were just never seen after that. And that was rattling the cage even of that physician. It ought to greatly trouble us as a society in terms of what we're saying. Remember that back before the rise of the Nazis in the Weimar Republic in Germany, the medical establishment came up with what they called a principle of life, Lebens und Wertens, Lebens, life unworthy of life. And we are walking right down that road, starting with where the technology is allowing us to make decisions. As Jim said, when doctors say we have options when it comes to Down syndrome. To join the conversation, call me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It is very interesting. Wesley Smith is exactly right when he, as a bioethicist, suggests that it's very, very strange and troubling that at this particular time, when we have human dignity being recovered in so many areas of life, we now have it being subverted when it comes to children with Down syndrome. And that's what makes the announcement of the birth of Trigg Paxson Van Palen in Alaska such a heartwarming thing, because here you have a very public family, the governor of Alaska with her husband, here welcoming this little boy into their lives as their fifth child, and making very clear that they understood they did, as the medical authorities say, have options. But it wasn't an option for them, because they were absolutely committed to bringing this child to life, to receiving him as God's gift. And the pride that this couple is showing in him is absolutely infectious. I don't know if you've seen anything of the media coverage of the press conference they held where they introduced their little boy to the world, but it has really made the news not only in Alaska but elsewhere. And it certainly is against the backdrop of the fact that between 80 and 90%, it is believed now, of all babies who are diagnosed before birth with the likelihood of Down syndrome are being aborted. And this is alarming people. It's alarming people even on both sides of the abortion issue in America. That's why, for instance, this Senate bill introduced by Sam Brownback is co-sponsored by Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts. I mentioned that Senator Kennedy had a vested interest in this. I'm going to get to that in a moment, but I want to invite you to call and join the program. I'd love to know what you're thinking about this, especially with Mother's Day on the horizon. There's a very special Mother's Day in Alaska, and in particular in the governor's mansion this year. And there are just all kinds of wonderful Mother's Days going on across this country. We'll be on Sunday, as it is observed by families who have a child with Down syndrome. And that very, very warm and inviting face is going to be a face thankful for his or her mother and for the fact that he or she was brought to life on this Mother's Day. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're always glad to hear from you by email. You can just go to albertmohler.com, hit the mail button, and it will get to us, or send from your own mail service to mail@albertmohler.com. We'll be glad to get as many of your calls and email messages on the air as is possible in this hour. The background to this is, of course, as we have said, the fact that there was considerable shame for a great deal of time, and for some families, perhaps even now, in terms of having a child with Down syndrome. And in terms of the 20th century, one of the things we learned is that when we find those of whom we will not even speak, we are undercutting the dignity of their lives. There are some amazing stories back in this. Just last year, it was discovered that Arthur Miller, the famous playwright, had a son who was born with Down syndrome. The son was named Daniel and is now alive and 41 years old. It is a son produced with Arthur Miller and his third wife, Inga Marath. And it turns out that Arthur Miller simply could not deal with the fact that this boy had Down syndrome, put him away in an institution, and did not even mention his existence in his memoir. The boy's existence was found only when the playwright's will was probated. And then, of course, you do have the story of Rosemary Kennedy, one of the daughters of Joe Kennedy, and when you start looking at this, Joe and Rose Kennedy had so many children who are well-known in American history, but Rosemary, their daughter, is not well-known, and she, at the end of her life, was also institutionalized. And that's why I think Senator Edward Kennedy has such a personal investment in this as well. Let's go to Richard, calling from Elizabethtown, Indiana. Go ahead, Richard.
Dr. Mohler, pleasure to talk to you, sir. I listen to your show every day. Just wanted to mention, I do have a Down syndrome daughter. She's 19, and actually, the night that we delivered her, not knowing that she was Downs, they did want to take her away from us, and we refused that immediately because we thought it was God's will that we had this child, and we were going to take care of it no matter what. And I just wanted to mention that my wife has actually counseled quite a few parents that have found out that they did have a Down syndrome in the womb, and surprisingly enough, because she told them how great our child was, that she actually talked them out of aborting the child, and they ended up keeping the child. And we still get letters from those parents that have kept that child and how wonderful it is and how blessed they are to have that that Down syndrome child. I just wanted to tell all the people out there that if they do find out early, that it's not a burden to them. It's not a, you know, any big hassle or anything to raise these children up and be God-loving children as they should be.
That's such a kind and clear word, Richard, and I really appreciate it. And I wish for you and your family a wonderful Mother's Day on this Mother's Day, but also all the joy you have in having that wonderful daughter who you have welcomed so warmly into your home. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you. I'd especially love to hear from some Christians willing to say, here is how I would make the argument. I appreciate very much what Richard had to say, saying that he and his wife have had the opportunity to counsel with parents who are deciding whether or not to abort a child diagnosed with the likelihood of Down syndrome. Well, let's put yourself in that position. What would you do? What would you say? The reality is that there may be any number of persons, with or without Down syndrome children of their own, who will be finding themselves in a position of talking to a couple or to a mother who is in the situation of making what now is presented by medical authorities as a decision. It's a decision that wasn't even presented to people in times past because the technology did not allow the information to be known. And it was a choice that wasn't a choice until the legalization of abortion. You put those two things together and you have what, again, some medical ethicists are calling a search and destroy mission going on in many wombs, all coming down to genetic indicators. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. The mail address is mail@albertmueller.com. Always glad to hear from you. Join the discussion. We do have, in this situation of Down syndrome, a reality in which there are many people who are told their baby is likely to have Down syndrome only to find out that it was a false positive. It is very, very interesting. In fact, just now I'm receiving an email from a listener who says that she is now pregnant with a baby. And early on she was informed that the baby had a very high chance of being a Down's baby. But she went on and said that she considers this child a precious gift from God, would never consider tossing him in the trash, she said, because he's not considered perfect. But she goes on to say that further testing has shown that he probably is normal, that in quotation marks, though we will not know for sure until the birth. But either way, we will still adore him and treasure him. A couple things out of this. Number one, what this writer, Jenny, is saying is very clearly that she is absolutely determined, along with her husband, to receive this child, adore him, and treasure him. Beautiful words there. But the other thing is just a reminder that in many cases, these tests are false positives. There are people out there who are aborting children based upon a knowledge that may not even be so. And that's a scary thing unto itself. You know, the whole issue of Down syndrome, and especially when you start dealing with the question of making an answer to someone dealing with this issue of Down syndrome or any kind of genetic malformity that many people may diagnose, the issue is how you would frame a response. And a response that's distinctively Christian is going to have to reach back to something deeper than "you ought not to do this." Let's go to John calling from Brainerd, Minnesota. Listen on XM170. Go ahead, John.
Hey, I just wanted to say that bless you guys for doing what you're doing and speaking the way that you are. And I think that this is all stemmed from, you know, being taught in the schools. These children are taught that life isn't really worth anything. It's just, you know, come from explosion. And without that idea that God has created us and loves us because he created us for his joy, there just doesn't have any, there's no life worth.
You know, John, I think the most important thing from your call is the reminder that God has to be brought into the equation, and in particular, in the grounding of human dignity. Because any effort to ground human dignity in nothing more transcendent than the human being is going to lead to frustration. Because then if we can define our own dignity, if we are the ground of our own dignity, if we have human dignity because we decide we do, then we can decide that we do not. Or we can decide that there are certain among us who do not. That's the whole story of the 20th century, regrettably and tragically. But the Christian response has to be, and as we were just talking before John began to speak, I mentioned that there has to be something deeper than the simple statement, you ought not to do this. And the something deeper has to begin in the fact that every single human being is made in the image of God. That distinctive starting point of Scripture that says the human beings are not indeed accidents, and they are not just animal creatures, but are the distinctive and unique creature made in the image of God. That's the starting place of an argument for human dignity. And if it is an argument for human dignity, then it is an argument for human dignity for every human being. And that's what is so important. In other words, if indeed the ground of our human dignity, and thus the argument for the sanctity of human life, comes down to the fact that human beings are made in the image of God, alone of all creation, we are the beings able to consciously know and glorify God. If that is indeed the basis of the argument, the foundation of the argument, as I believe it must be, then we have to recognize that that extends to every single human being. We have to look back through human history and see that the human race is woefully, woefully guilty of deciding that certain of its own members simply do not meet muster for human dignity. We have the most obvious cases, such as the medical ethics of the Weimar regime in Germany, certainly adopted by the Nazi regime, in which you have Lebens und Wertenslebens, you know, life unworthy of life. And, of course, that was assigned to groups that the Third Reich eventually wanted to get rid of, including Jews and homosexuals and persons with Down syndrome and the grotesquely handicapped, as some were classified, and others who were just considered to be racially and physically inferior. And we look back at that in horror, and appropriately so. But the reality is that there are many people who look at the Nazi genocide with horror, look at the Nazi medical experiments with absolute revulsion, and yet we are blind to the fact that very similar things are going on right in our own communities. And it's not so open and blatant as what went on in Nazi Germany. Instead, it can be very quiet and private and in a professional setting, where genetic testing is now giving people information, and then couples or mothers are being told, you have options. You know, one of the things as Christians we need to get out of this is the reminder that there are certain things we have to keep in mind when it comes to children and when it comes to pregnancy. And one of the things we have to keep in mind is that we have no options. In other words, if we enter into this, then we're playing the same game. A very recent author has written a book entitled The Tentative Pregnancy, suggesting that we're now in an age in which most people consider pregnancy now tentative. If the baby or the pregnancy turns out or looks positive, looks to be what will be convenient, well-timed, looks to be what will fit within the larger set of priorities, if the baby looks like everything is going well, then the pregnancy can continue and the baby may be born. But in the age of the tentative pregnancy, it's really up to the baby to prove that he or she is worthy of being born. And perhaps even that the context is right for the birth to take place, that the financial situation and all the rest is actually appropriate for him to be born. This is such a moral reversal of all of human history. And yet we're living in a time in which people are being told, you have options. One of the things we need to keep in mind is that when it comes to pregnancy, when it comes to a diagnosis like this, we're already headed down a dangerous road if we accept that we do have options. We'll be right back. Well, I just have to tell you, I'm so encouraged as we have reheard that conversation, rebroadcast just a few months ago here on this program, and back in a time when no one really had heard of this Alaska governor except the folks in Alaska. But now Senator John McCain has chosen her to be his running mate for the 2008 presidential ticket of the Republican Party, and all of America is going to get to know the Palin family. It's inevitable. It's just in the crucible of a political campaign like this, a presidential election, America is going to get to know this family, and I am thrilled about that. I was so thrilled by the picture, going back to Middletown, Ohio, when the announcement was made last Friday, and there was the Palin family. You had Governor Sarah Palin, her husband Todd, you had their three daughters. You didn't have their oldest son because just out of high school he joined the Army, getting ready to go in just a few days to Iraq. But the youngest son was there. There was little Trigg Paxton Van Palin. Here was this little baby, now 4 months old, chubby little thing in his sister's arms, just looking like the cute, adorable baby made in the image of God that he is. And that's just judgment upon America for thinking that we can allow ourselves to have 80 to 90% of the babies in this nation diagnosed prenatally with Down syndrome to be aborted. We have to have the recovery of the sanctity of human life, and that's an important issue in this presidential election, and I will acknowledge there are many other issues. There are many other important issues. But I'm also going to be just ruthlessly honest and tell you that the issue of the sanctity of human life is front and center in my concerns. And I am thankful for, in this case, a governor who is also a mother, who is committed to the sanctity of human life, not just as a theory, not just as a principle, not just as a political position, but in terms of her family and her life. And there it is before our eyes as we've seen this family appear. Now, as we're looking to the Republican National Convention starting in Minneapolis tonight, let's do exactly what I commended and suggested that we do back when the Democrats were getting ready to meet in Denver. Let's look very carefully at what's going on. Let's look beyond the personalities, look beyond the scripted performances and beyond all of the flash and the same things that go on every time when these political parties meet. And instead, let's look at what's really going on in terms of the policies, the principles, and the plans of this party that will shape how America would be led and directed if this ticket is elected as the President and Vice President of the United States. There's a lot here for intelligent Christians to take into consideration. There's a lot to watch in terms of the dance of democracy and this experiment of ordered liberty and freedom. There's an incredible stewardship that is ours, and that is the stewardship, yes, of a vote, also the stewardship of influence, and for parents especially, the stewardship of a teachable moment, of an educational opportunity to help our children understand what's going on here. When you think about your kids, just corral them for these next four nights and put them in front of the television, something I wouldn't always commend that you do. Watch some of the speeches and the unfolding drama. Watch it together and think about what's really going on. Look beyond all of the flash to the worldview implications at stake. Help your children to become educated and informed voters. Informed and educated not just about the political process, but about the Christian worldview and its implications. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.